Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. My guest this week is Dr. Sasha Filbert. He's a neuroscientist at the University of Manchester, and he's working on dementia. Now, this is a huge and increasing problem.
At the moment, there are around 980,000 people currently living with dementia in the UK, and around 55 million people worldwide.
However, it's not all doom and gloom.
I want to try and improve diagnosis at the earlier stages during routine clinical use by doing a simple MRI scan to measure sodium or salt in the brain. And I think if my hypothesis is correct, then this could improve diagnosis at that initial consultation.
Dr. Filbert is using data from the Our Future Health program to help get a handle and make headway on this large problem. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. Dr. Filbert is using information from the Our Future Health program. So first of all, I asked him just to describe a little bit about what that is.
Yes, so Our Future Health is the UK's largest ever health research program. It's designed to help everyone live longer and healthier lives through discovery and testing of more effective approaches to prevention, detection and treatment of diseases. So it's a huge initiative. They've invited up to, I think, 5 million people so far, all different types of backgrounds from across the UK. And these volunteers are providing information about their health and lifestyle to create an incredibly detailed picture that represents the whole of the UK. And so researchers like me can then apply to securely access this data. And then we will then make new discoveries about health and diseases to kind of progress research a bit further.
Yeah.
And so by developing a more detailed understanding of what makes certain people more likely to develop disease, plus what to look out for before the onset of symptoms, we can potentially help develop more effective approaches to prevention, detection, and treatment. So that's okay. Kind of their main ethos.
All right. And so I volunteered for this. I went along, I gave some blood, answered a load of questions, and anyone can do that. So if you're interested, I'll just mention this and then we'll get on to your particular area.
Perfect.
Just Google Our Future Health. You can go to their website and you can apply to get involved. And it's very easy to do. And you actually, there are some bonuses you get for doing it. But the main bonus is knowing you've done something useful, because you really can help research. You can help public health. And it's a worthwhile thing to do. But anyway, on to you, Sasha, and your work. You're using this kind of some of this vast amount of data to look at dementia.
Yes,
which is worth doing because it's in the news a lot. It's I think it's happening more and more for various reasons, and we might come on to that. But my first question really is: people talk about dementia, but it's not just one thing, is it? Now, I get the impression it's a few different diseases. Can you kind of give us some simple information about that?
No, you're absolutely correct. So dementia is a set of symptoms. This can range from memory impairments, issues with problem solving, speech production, gait, motor impairments, stuff like that. But I think a lot of people, when they think of dementia, they think of memory impairments straight away. There are a variety of different diseases that can cause dementia, of which Alzheimer's disease is the most common, the most prevalent, followed by vascular dementia and then mixed dementia, which is a combination of different types of dementias. But yes, you're right. It is a set of symptoms that can affect anyone, really.
Okay. So you say Alzheimer's and vascular dementia, the two main things.
Yes.
This is probably an unfair question, but can you just briefly say what the difference is between them, what they are?
Of course. Yeah. So Alzheimer's disease is caused by abnormal amounts of proteins in the brain. Two main proteins are amyloid beta and tau. And these can lead to a kind of the downstream abnormalities in Alzheimer's disease and lead to dementia as well. Whereas vascular dementia, this is caused by abnormalities in the vessels, the very small vessels in the brain. Again, leading to a reduction of blood flow to certain brain regions and then leading to other issues like dementia.
Okay. All right. I mentioned earlier that it seems to be getting more popular. That's the wrong phrase. But more and more people are suffering from dementia. Like, just how much of a problem is it? How many people suffer from dementia? And is it going to get worse in the future?
Yes, no, you're right. It is getting more prevalent. It is getting worse. So around, you may know this already, but around one in two of us will be affected by dementia in our lifetime. That's either directly or indirectly. So you're getting dementia yourself or caring for someone or loved one with dementia. At the moment, there are around 980,000 people currently living with dementia in the UK and around 55 million people worldwide. We know that about one in 14 people over the age of 65 are living with dementia in the UK, and this has a huge cost to the UK as well. So around £42.5 billion in the UK in 2024 alone. So it is a huge issue at the moment.
Okay, so it needs some resources to look at it, to try and,
Yes.
help people that have it and slow it down and avoid it, and for all kinds of different reasons. I suppose, if nothing else, just the commercial reason. This costs a lot of money to look after
Exactly.
people, and if they have dementia, they're a wasted resource. They can't work anymore.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you're 100% right.
So, all right, so you're looking at this. How is our future youth kind of, sorry, our future health? How's that useful to you? What can you do with this huge amount of information?
So I'm still in the early stages of my research, so I'm not using Our Future Health at the moment, but I plan to after my kind of initial preliminary results. So I'm interested in biomarkers. So these are essentially molecules in your body that help to determine what kind of disease you may have. So the word biomarker is short for biological marker. And so you can think of it as a signal that helps doctors understand what's happening inside your body, essentially. And so as part of Our Future Health, we have access to blood samples, and you've given the blood sample to Our Future Health already. And so I can take that sample, analyze it, and see what's going on in that blood to help detect diseases. And you can have biomarkers both before and after diagnosis. So you can understanding of how these biomarkers change with disease severity.
Okay. At this point, it might be worth just making the very important point that all the data you have is anonymous. It's not associated with anyone. So you can't look at my blood and then give us a call and say, "Hey, Mike, I think there's something you need to look at here," because it's just there's absolutely no possibility of that.
You're completely right. Yeah, it's all anonymous. I don't know who you are. I don't have your phone number, so yeah, no, you're right.
Good. All right. So important to say that. All right. So you're looking at biomarkers. So it's th this is, things in the blood that may appear before the onset of dementia and after the onset of dementia. So can we be a bit more specific than my rather layman's terms of things in the blood?
No. So the word, so biomarkers is a very broad term. You can have different biomarkers. You can have blood-based biomarkers, so looking at kind of proteins or certain molecules in the blood. You can have imaging biomarkers, so looking at shrinkage of the brain called atrophy or certain lesions in the brain. You can have cognitive biomarkers, so when you do a neuropsychiatric test, if you perform poorly or you do quite well on the test, that could be a marker of certain types of dementia. There are a variety of different types of biomarkers, which I'm trying to get at. But the ones that I'm mainly interested in are imaging biomarkers, which relates to my fellowship, and then blood or protein biomarkers in the blood and cerebrospinal fluid, which is the fluid in your spinal canal, which helps, it's the best window to the brain, essentially.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so I'm looking at these protein changes in the blood, the CSF, and looking at the brain as well.
All right, but as far as the data you're getting from Our Future Health,
Yes,
it's
yeah.
just the blood, presumably, is it?
Correct, correct, yeah.
All right. So someone's blood who might be about, I guess this is the question you want to ask, but I suppose before you ask the questions, you've got to have some sort of potential hypothesis of thoughts. What might be different? What sort of things might be different in someone's blood who's going to get dementia as opposed to someone who might not?
At the moment, the currently routinely accepted markers for Alzheimer's disease in particular, not vascular dementia, are those two proteins I talked about before. So amyloid beta and different types of tau isoforms. So you can measure these two proteins in the blood, see if they're increased or decreased. And based on the current thresholds, current detection limits, we'll be able to understand if someone is likely to have a certain disease like Alzheimer's disease.
Okay. I'm wondering if there are potentially many more markers than that, because I have spoken to other researchers who are using really quite sophisticated techniques to look at biomarkers, and this is in relation to different sorts of cancers. But when I was talking to them, they were talking about actually, there could be 50 or 100 biomarkers that, and the amounts that they appear can change a little bit. And it's not the fact that you get one biomarker. So if you've got this biomarker, sorry, pal, you're definitely going to get cancer. It's a whole array. And I can imagine it might be the same with or similar with dementia. You're nodding your head, so
No, yeah,
I'm
sorry,
not.
no, you're completely correct. So yeah, there's no just one biomarker for any disease. It's a combination of different biomarkers. And they're not just blood biomarkers, they're imaging biomarkers. They're looking at family history, you're looking at cognitive tests. It's this whole combination to kind of try to create this diagnosis. But your earlier point about there being multiple biomarkers in the blood, you're 100% right. So I use a technique called mass spectrometry, and it measures molecules by measuring their mass. And you can measure hundreds or thousands of analytes, molecules, or proteins in a single sample. And that's how I try to choose the most appropriate biomarkers for kind of downstream analysis.
Right.
And so we know there are a few more markers that are apparent in Alzheimer's disease, but there isn't really much in vascular dementia, which is the whole basis of my fellowship. So I want to see if there are more possible biomarkers in the blood to
Okay.
help aid diagnosis.
So I must admit, my thought when I heard you were doing this, I thought, okay, if say you want to investigate, just say 10 biomarkers in the blood, which seems perfectly possible. And you are looking at millions and millions of blood samples. Say, I mean, I'm sure you're not looking at all 5 million people that have so far donated their blood, or 6 million people, whatever. But say you're just looking at, I don't know, half a million. If you've got half a million samples and you've got 10 data points in each of those samples, all of a sudden, you've got a massive amount of data. This is not the sort of thing you can get a little piece of graph paper and draw a graph and sort of come up with some. I said, how on earth can you analyze that vast amount of information without just getting completely overwhelmed? You've got to come up with some, try and come up with something useful out of this just mass of information. I wouldn't know where to start. What do you do?
Well, from that kind of perspective, it's a lot of it's to do with your models, your statistical methods, how you approach this kind of this design. What I will say before is that what my earlier point is that there is no one panel, one single biomarker. We use other markers to help diagnosis. So this is where these other markers will help inform whether these markers are good. So normally you would compare the gold standards for Alzheimer's diagnosis with these additional markers to see if they are equivalent or even better than what we had before. But yeah, you're right. It is a huge challenge, and which is probably why we don't have a kind of top tier biomarker at the moment.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise, elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This question seems to crop up with all scientific research at the moment. AI, artificial intelligence. Now, sometimes when I'm talking about it, I make the quip, actually, I prefer real intelligence as opposed to artificial intelligence. But if you've got so much data to try and analyze, are you getting some very sort of clever AI people involved to sort of try and make sense of all these millions of data points? Or maybe that's what you're doing yourself.
I mean, that's that. Yes, I would love to get into that, but that's probably a bit too much for me. My specialties lie elsewhere. But we do have people called bioinformaticians, who are people trained in these kind of methods, kind of complex statistical models, who will help do this. So it takes a team, a whole lab, to do these kind of analyses, not just one person.
Yeah.
So yes, that is coming into research more. I've seen it more often at conferences, but I'm not doing that at the moment. But hopefully one day.
Okay. All right. So what's the final objective? My thought might be perhaps it exists already to some extent, a home test. You know, there are various home tests for things you can send off, and you get an envelope which has got a little pin in, and you stick it in your finger, and there's a special thing for catching the blood. And sometimes you could even do the test at home. You know, you dip the blood into a bit of paper, and if it goes whatever color, or you send it off to the lab. Does something like that exist, or is that, I guess, the objective? A nice, simple test for different sorts of dementia?
Yes, no, that would be ideal. I think that is what we're working towards as a research community, similar to what you might see for blood sugar levels for diabetics. Pick your finger, send it off into the post, we'll get a diagnosis. Yes, we're moving towards that kind of research. And there has been some recent research. There's a manuscript published in January. I did just that. They looked at blood from a fingerprint and compared it with the kind of the gold standard blood measurements for Alzheimer's disease biomarkers. And they saw pretty good correlations between the two tests. So yes, we are going in that direction. There's still a lot of work needs to be done before that could be used for routine kind of clinical use. And obviously, blood biomarkers are great, but they're still not as good as biomarkers in the CSF, the cerebrospinal fluid. So it'll be a while before we get to that kind of result.
And that's not a test you can do at home, is it?
No, thankfully, no. Now, you know, a trained clinician who has a lot of experience dealing with these lumbar punctures, so dealing a spine into the spinal canal, the lower part of the back, and yes, that's extremely expensive, but it provides a better picture of brain health during disease.
Yeah. I must admit that the sort of plethora of home tests that can be done at the moment, I do sometimes wonder how useful they are, and that they might just serve to kind of scare the hell out of people. I have come across situations where they do absolutely terrify people, which might be less useful. Some things you might be better off not knowing, or knowing years in advance, so maybe you can do something about it. I don't know. What you're working towards, what category do you think it might come in?
That's a good question. I haven't been asked that before, actually.
We ask the difficult questions on this show.
Yes. So for the people I spoke to who have either dementia themselves, vascular dementia, or they're caring for someone with vascular dementia, they all say the same thing. They say that they just want to know what they have, what type of dementia they have, and not knowing gives them anxiety. So from that point of view, being able to tell someone they have a certain type of dementia with a high degree of accuracy would be great for them. In terms of early stage disease detection, if someone doesn't want to know, yes, that could cause increased anxiety as well. No, you might have certain risk factor for a certain disease. But it's entirely up to them if they want this diagnosis.
Which I guess leads on to the question, could your work help people to think, right, actually, I'm not suffering yet, and I'm 20 years old or 30 years old now. In the future, may I have the biomarkers now that show I might be susceptible to these kind of things in 50 years' time? And then the lead on to that, is that useful? Can I start doing something now to try and reduce the likelihood of getting some sort of dementia in 50 years' time?
So, yes, if you're talking about Alzheimer's disease, I mean, there are genetic risk factors like APOE4, which increases your likelihood of getting Alzheimer's disease at a later date. Yes, you can modify your lifestyle. You can eat healthy, you can exercise, you can limit smoking, drinking, which again may decrease your risk. But it's hard to say so early on in terms of diagnosis. But definitely increasing and changing your lifestyle, doing those things can reduce your risk of getting dementia and Alzheimer's disease later on.
Right. But there's no classic sort of silver bullet. It's the sort of lifestyle changes that anyone should all be doing, really.
Yes, yes. But so there are no disease modifying therapies currently approved in the UK. And so until we have those, we can't change the disease outcome. We can just prevent or reduce the risk of getting the disease.
Right. Okay, another impossible, unfair question. Do you think the work that you're doing based on, well, our future health and the other things you mentioned, is there could come a time when that is the case? You know, you can find out with some degree of, well, I suppose correctness, you know, not just, oh, you may well be getting this, but in 50 years' time, you better watch out, pal, because there's a 90% chance you're going to be suffering from dementia. Do you think that's at all likely in the future?
100%. 100%. I think we're very close to that happening. In terms of our future health, I mean, the sheer mass of data they have, or they're collecting at the moment, not just from one population group, from different ethnicities, different sectors, different ages, different classes, it's great. So we need to find if a certain mechanism works in everyone, not just one social group. 100%, I think that we are moving towards that direction. In terms of my research and looking at various proteins in the blood and CSF, and looking at the brain as well, that's essentially what my fellowship is. I want to try and improve diagnosis at the earlier stages during routine clinical use by doing a simple MRI scan to measure sodium or salt in the brain. And I think if my hypothesis is correct, then this could improve diagnosis at that initial consultation.
Okay, which could help a lot of people.
Yes, yes. Well, that's the idea anyway.
Yeah, okay. And that does throw up another one spectre. A lot of people would be very interested in this information, not just the individual, because they can try and do something to head it off at the pass. Governments might be interested because they can plan ahead. But I'm thinking more sort of commercial type interests. Health insurance companies are going to be very interested in this kind of stuff. You know, if you find that, well, actually, people from a certain ethnicity are much more likely to suffer from this in the future, that has pretty serious implications for health insurance and becomes a little bit scary. What are your thoughts about that?
Yes, no, that is a really good point, actually. So everyone, first of all, everyone will have access to this data, given they have kind of ethical clearance. So this won't be just for a select few researchers. And as researchers, we're invited to discuss our findings with everyone. So everyone will find out about
hopefully you'll get it published. And then
yes,
you know,
exactly.
everyone can read it.
Yeah, no, definitely. As for the implications of having this kind of data, I'm not too sure, actually. That's a really good point. I haven't really thought about it before. But yes, I guess that could impact stuff like that, what you just said. So yeah, no, that's a good point.
It will not only impact the commercial side of things, but treatments as well. Because at the moment, if you go to the doctor and the doctor is suspecting a type of dementia, does the treatment change depending what ethnicity you are? I suspect it might not.
It doesn't at the moment, which is why we need this kind of idea of personalised treatments, and why initiatives like Our Future Health is so good, because we're having kind of these kind of huge kind of groups of different ethnicities. We don't know if said treatments work on different ethnicities or sexes for that matter. And so this kind of research will really help that and go toward a kind of more personalised treatment avenue.
This is very interesting stuff, and I can see this continuing for a while. We might have to make a date for, you know, 12 months' time to get you back on again. Because my feeling is this is actually going to move quite fast, or this is moving quite fast already. And
yes,
to keep up, we're going to have to invite you on in the future.
No, I would love to come back, definitely.
Okay, all right. We will make a date and get you back on, because I genuinely think this is very interesting, and I do think it's going to move quite fast. Now, if people are listening to this and thinking, goodness, you know, this guy, he's interesting. He's working on some really interesting stuff. I got two questions for you. Would you recommend any budding biologists, maybe people studying biology at the moment and as a degree, to go and specialize in neuroscience? Because, you know, it's interesting. It's just good to know what's going on. And also, if people aren't quite so specialized and they want to find out a bit more, any sources of information that are appropriate, you know, to the rest of us? You know, we don't have to be a neuroscientist boffin, but maybe Joe Public would like to read a bit more.
Yeah.
So two questions.
Of course, yeah. So your first question, should people study neuroscience or study the brain? Yes, it is a great space to be in at the moment. We don't really know much, and we're on the verge of a kind of a big research boom. There's a lot more to find out. So in particular, vascular dementia is a great field to be in at the moment, because we just don't know much about it. But I would say study it or research it if you're interested. Don't just do it because I told you to or someone else told you to. follow your passion, which is what I'm trying to say. But it is a great space to be in at the moment. As for your second question, so I'm funded by Alzheimer's Society, and they have a really good kind of FAQ page, giving like a fact sheet of different types of dementias, and so that's really good. Alzheimer's Research UK, they have another good page about facts about dementia, different types of dementias. So I would recommend looking at those two websites to gain more information about these kind of diseases.
Excellent. All right, that sounds like good advice. So, Sasha, look, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to chat. And I will hold you to coming back in a little while to tell us how it's going.
Perfect. Yeah, no, I'd love to come back.
Thank you very much to my guest this week. That was Dr. Sasha Filbert talking about his work on dementia. Thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.